Up next, how is literal belief in biblical prophecy applied to modern life? I'll talk to the directors of a new documentary called Waiting for Armageddon, which explores America's 50 million member evangelical Christian community and how it shapes U.S. society and politics. By the way, we're hosting another low-paid show, free film screening, next Tuesday, February 3rd. We will be watching the Frank Capra classic, American Madness, at the Galapagos Art Space in Dumbo. More information is on our show page at WNYC.org.
WNYC receives support from The Silver Palette, makers of gourmet food products, including whole tomato pasta sauce and Silver Palette thick and rough oatmeal, made with 100% whole grain milled oats, no salt, sugar, or fat added. More information at silverpalette.com. Roundabout Theater Company, presenting Hedda Gabler on Broadway, starring Mary Louise Parker. Limited engagement. Tickets at 212-719-1300 or roundabouttheater.org. The New School, hosting an information session for its bachelor's degree program designed for working adults, offered on campus and online, January 27th at 6:30 p.m. at 55 West 13th Street, on the web at newschool.edu/BA.
The New School supports WNYC and offers courses in more than a dozen languages. A basic Italian course, Speaking, Writing, and Reading, starts February 3rd for 13 sessions. Information, newschool.edu. WNYC is giving away one seat in this course to the fourth caller to reach us at 212-433-9692. But please note, if you've won anything from WNYC in the past 30 days, you're not eligible for the course.
Now America's trying to gut Israel to appease Islamofascism, saying give them Judea and give them Samaria, give them part of Jerusalem. I say never, never. Because the integrity of God rests with Israel and his ability to keep the city of Jerusalem as his now and forever.
Many Christian evangelicals, like the Reverend John Hagee, who we just heard, are among Israel's strongest supporters, while they simultaneously pray for its destruction. Waiting for Armageddon, a new documentary film by Kate Davis, David Heilbrunner, and Frank Osaki, explores the contradiction that I've just described as it delves into the lives and politics of the American evangelical movement. The film has been chosen to close the New York Jewish Film Festival at the Walter Reed Theater at Lincoln Center with a screening on January 28th at 2 p.m. and then the closing screening on January 29th at 8:30. And I'm very pleased to welcome two of the film's directors, Kate Davis and David Heilbrunner, to the show today. Hello.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
How many Americans identify themselves as evangelical Christians?
Well, you know, when we were looking for that number, which we finally settled on 50 million, we were so reluctant to use it because we thought, gosh, that's a really high number. That's, you know, we're only a 300 million person country. But we researched and researched, and it does appear to be that that's correct. So it's about one in six citizens.
Hasn't the evangelical movement lost some power over the past few years? A lot of people assume that it was weakened further by the election of Barack Obama.
Sure. I think that it's fair to say the evangelical movement lost out in the last election, but they are here to stay. They're not changing their religious affiliation or their beliefs.
Also, it tends to be that they will regroup and become more organized in opposition with a party that they oppose.
How many people in Congress are evangelical Christians or vote according to evangelical beliefs? Do we know?
I don't think we do. I know they lost one major evangelical, Rick Santorum, in the last cycle. But a good analogy is the National Rifle Association. Evangelicals vote in a block. And one of the things that we were always fascinated with when he made the film is why this confessed love of Israel and the Jews. And that's what sort of got us into the whole subject.
Now, not all evangelicals agree. The first evangelical to become president of the United States was Jimmy Carter. And he's gotten into a lot of trouble for being critical of Israel.
Well, yeah, he has. And I think when you find major politicians criticizing Israel, I remember seeing John Stewart the other night asking, you know, how come you can't say anything bad about Israel? What's the big deal? One of the big deals is you alienate this very powerful voting bloc. Jimmy Carter brought religion into politics in a way that hadn't ever been done before. But quickly, the religious right took that ground and ran with it.
You include a clip of Ronald Reagan discussing prophecy during one of the presidential debates, and he seems to believe it, but he also takes an equivocal view on when Armageddon may actually happen.
Right, and that's happened over time, I think, for a lot of end-time believers. They've been proved to be wrong as their dates have passed for the end of the world, so it's certainly safe, and Reagan was on to that. But, yeah, he was very concerned that, and counting down for the time when the apocalypse would happen and Jesus would return. And that's really what the film is about. I mean, that was, you know, we caught it on screen there in the political realm, presidential realm. But this exists as a worldview all over the place.
And you talk to a family mm-hmm. that believes it will happen very, very soon. And there's a touching interview with the teenage daughter in that family who says she believes that the end of days is soon to happen, but she wishes it would come a little later when she's 85 and she's been able to live a full life.
Right. She hopes it doesn't happen before her birthday or her chance to go to the prom and a lot of things. I mean, I think we did try to, in finding regular families, educated people, there are two rocket scientists in the film who live in Connecticut, and it goes all the way up to, sort of political realm, as you mentioned. We try to show that this kind of belief is very widespread. It doesn't, it's not segregated to a fringe cult part of the society. And this interpretation, literal interpretation of the Bible, has political consequences.
Because many of the evangelicals are not just in your film and not just waiting for Armageddon, as your title suggests, but they are actually pursuing Armageddon, aren't they?
Oh, Armageddon is a good thing if you're a Christian. All the evils of the world will melt away and Jesus will come back and everything's going to be great. So absolutely what was astonishing, though, is the people who believe this. I mean, in our little Upper West Side subculture where we're from, I think of evangelicals, I had a very negative preconception. And going out into the world and meeting people, you find they're sophisticated, they're organized, they're educated, they're rational. It's not... these are folks who are to be reckoned with and taken seriously.
So let's talk about what they believe. What do they think happens during Armageddon? First of all, Armageddon, it really means Mount Megiddon?
Megiddo?
Mount Megiddo. Har-Megiddo. Har is mountain and Mount Megiddo. The film is structured around the story of the end of the world, essentially. What happens is, as the end times get closer and closer and closer, Jesus appears in the clouds. This is what people literally believe. It's not a metaphor. It's not poetry.
This is called the rapture.
The rapture. And he sucks you out of your clothes, and you join him and watch as the rest of the world goes through a tribulation period of 7 years, during which the oceans turn to blood, two-thirds of the population dies off, and you either convert to Christianity, therefore a evangelical form of Christianity, or you eventually die and go to hell. And one of the events that will send you to your death is the Battle of Armageddon, which is the battle to end all battles.
So how does this lead to these evangelicals who believe this donating money to Israel and being such strong supporters of Israel to the point where John Hagee he sounds quite racist when he talks about Muslims in regard to Israel.
Well, that was to us one of the $64 questions. What is this strange political alliance between the evangelicals and the Jewish people? And the answer is very simple. Under evangelical theology, the Jews have to maintain control of Israel, Jerusalem, and the Temple Mount, where Jesus won't come back and save the world.
The Temple Mount is right now where one of the great Muslim buildings...
The Al-Aqsa Mosque. And it's an immensely sensitive piece of real estate because the Jews believe it has a stone in it on which God stood when he created the world. The Muslim community believes it's where Muhammad, I forget exactly what, it eludes me right now, but it has immense religious significance for many different religions. And they come together, each claiming that this represents their version of the truth.
So... Israel has to remain Jewish, but all the Jews have to convert. So what did Jews in Israel say?
A certain
to you?
Number of the Jews have to convert.
And the ones who are the
144,000.
Only 144,000, and the rest will just be killed like all the other non-believers?
Right. Yep. They will perish, and Israel, by and large, accepts this money and support from the evangelicals because they're, you know, good business people.
Yeah, there's a nice clip in our film, we were delighted to find it, of Ehud Olmert, the prime minister, saying to the evangelicals, thank you for your, basically thank you for your money. They donate millions, $75 million a year to Israel.
But you also have footage of evangelicals on some kind of a, well, on a trip to the Temple Mount, and the Israelis nearby ask them to keep their voices down because what they're saying is considered inflammatory.
That's right. They sneak in a Christian prayer in a
so both
small
the
mosque.
Jews and the Muslims would be upset.
Very
by what
much
done.
So. I think that reflected the kind of thinking that goes along with these evangelicals, kind of feeling like they can walk into Israel and they do have a certain amount of control over the land and helping prophecy happen.
How much of the popular view of Armageddon has been influenced by the Left Behind series of books?
Left Behind series is not to be underestimated. I think it's one of the best-selling series of books of all time by Tim LaHaye and his co-author. I think it's had a huge effect on the popularization of Armageddon in a positive light, that this is somehow a battle that's going to be, as one of our characters in our film says, fun to watch. You know, there's a video game to go along with Armageddon. These are it's done in Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator colors.
There's a lot of blood, isn't there?
Yeah, and people seem to enjoy it. There's a sense of fighting the Antichrist, fighting the forces of evil, and you're this Clint Eastwood, Arnold Schwarzenegger character on a righteous battle.
My guests are David Heilbrunner and Kate Davis, two of the filmmakers responsible for Waiting for Armageddon, which is the closing film of the New York Jewish Film Festival. It will be screened on January 28th and January 29th. Well, pretty much all of the evangelicals we see in the film are white. There are a lot of black evangelicals, aren't there?
Well, one of the places we filmed was the National Convention of people who are interested in prophecy. And that took place in Texas. And I have to say, I saw very, very few.
There are, however, Jewish evangelicals, which is a wonderful subset of Jews who have converted, who have bought into this theology. And so I can't say that there's a large African-American contingent. The Jewish contingent is surprisingly large and vocal.
And one of the speakers at that conference sees modern politics as postmodern, with feminists and gays against European white males.
Yes,
so that almost sounds like something else that we have pretty much seen as abhorrent earlier in the, I guess, within the last 50 or 60 years.
Well, take the first part of that. The postmodern comment, I think, is one more blow against the stereotype of evangelicals being either unsophisticated or uneducated. We went to this conference, and here's this man talking about Derrida and Foucault and postmodernism and the lack of literalism in reading the Bible and a more interpretive view. And he was saying, no, we're being very specific and rational, and we don't want this squishy, amoral, leftist philosophy to infect our society. I was amazed how well-educated these folks are and how organized and how rational and how what I think the lesson of the film is, hopefully, is people realize how politically influential they have been.
Well, some of it seems a little wild. I received this email the other day. It says, from the Mountain Prophecies, Book 12, extremely important messages from our Father in Heaven, Barack Hussein Obama is the Antichrist.
Mm. Oh, the Antichrist has to be understood in terms
now,
of the evangelical.
Can he be the Antichrist? Because I thought the Antichrist doesn't come until after the rapture, and as far as I've heard, the rapture hasn't happened yet.
Well, no, the Antichrist can exist before the rapture, but the Antichrist won't move into the Temple Mount and declare himself God until after the rapture. The Antichrist is actually supposed to be a very attractive figure who cloaks himself in the mantle of peace and seduces everybody into thinking he's going to bring the world together. And then he installs himself in the Temple Mount, at which point he declares himself God and everybody realizes that basically all hell's breaking loose.
Now, the underlying message of this film, in which you try to be very fair and you do give everybody a chance to say his or her piece, but the underlying message is that this can lead to some pretty dangerous stuff. Is that fair to say?
I think that is fair to say. I think that in a kind of heightened atmosphere of fear of the future, you know, we've got plenty of things that are going terribly wrong in the world, the simple story of the good people rising up and landing in a kind of paradise in the future, and the rest of us, you know, disappearing and dying is very appealing. So how is that dangerous? Well, these people are, you know, many of these thinkers are in Washington. They are on school boards. They have hundreds and hundreds of radio stations. They have television stations that reach millions. They continue to try to paint a very black and white picture of the world where there is, you know, Islamofascists or Antichrist and people so that, that we can pit ourselves against. And in so doing, I think that they are, you know, only feeding a sort of agenda which is militaristic and aggressive, and let's, you know, bomb or anybody who might threaten Israel. This is a very, you know, very aggressive stance.
And war is seen as a good thing, ultimately, by the likes of John Hagee, who encouraged World War III to, you know, bring it on.
But wasn't Jesus the Prince of Peace?
Jesus arrives in evangelical theology with a sword by his side, and he smites the Antichrist, and he does battle with evil, and it's the bloodiest battle in the history of man. So Jesus has two faces, and one of the what we wanted to do when we did include a number of voices that are critical of the bellicose, warmongering evangelicals is to say that
some in the evangelical community.
Yes,
as well.
There are voices from within who are saying this is wrong. This is an extreme interpretation of the Bible and a dangerous one. And the film really didn't want to create an us and them dialogue in the film. I think we hoped to portray the community from the inside out and thereby, you know, avoid stereotyping and avoid oversimplifying the argument.
And also we wanted in sort of laying out many different points of view on this, but largely placing the film in the perspective of evangelicals and their worldview and how it all relates to prophecy, we wanted the film to open people's minds and, you know, spark conversation rather than give concrete answers.
How did they respond when you asked them to appear in the film? Were they suspicious, these Upper West Siders, New York City?
Actually, it took a little time, particularly to get permission to follow them on a tour of Israel. They apparently had not let any other film crews on such tours, so we were the first. And I think we just over and over sort of present ourselves as people, which we are, who wanted to show their point of view. We also said there may be a couple of critics, and there are in the film, people like Mel White. However, it was largely to tell their story. So they took us in. They might have even wanted to convert us.
And I think they did some homework. All of us have made films before, independently and together. None of our films are demonizing. None of our films are of the Michael Moore gotcha variety, much as I like Michael Moore, so don't get me wrong. I'm a big admirer. But that's not who we are.
Mm-hmm. There, you did speak to people in Israel, Jews in Israel, who weren't as happy about these people because they were critical of anything Christian. So there, to some degree, this is complicated by the fact that we have three major religions that are all interrelated and at the same time have many adherents who consider anybody who's not a member of the religion to be, what did the guy call Christians? Witches? He called Jesus a witch and a sorcerer.
Yes, and a ladies' man. And there's a tremendous amount of theological discord among these groups. There has to be. They're different religions, and with all religious strict constructionists, you're going to end up with an almost insoluble problem. What the film wanted to do is portray that problem. I wish I had answers, but at least you can understand the situation better if you see the movie.
To some degree, aren't these people also welcomed in Israel because of their tourist dollars? Many want to be baptized in the Jordan River, don't
right.
they?
Right. It's a great tourist attraction, and it brings in a lot of money. There are many, you can, you know, Google many different Christian tours and jump on one and see where Jesus will come back. They go around. So it's not just a historical tour. It's a tour of the future. And so it is a practical choice, but it does divide. I think you brought up a good point that Israel has many different factions, including the, sort of leftist Jews who are also critical and say, look, we're in accepting this money. We're going along with a plan where we are essentially the pawns of the game. We will be dispensed with, and they're really not loving us. It's a false love. So it brings up a lot of issues.
And this has also caused some division in the American Jewish community, where neoconservatives on the whole have been very much in support of the evangelicals, and liberals have been horrified by involvement in politics.
I'm really looking forward to the Q&A being the closing night of the New York Jewish Film Festival.
Because you're going to be doing you're going to be at a reception as well?
There'll be a reception, and I'm really delighted that the festival would choose our film, because it is controversial within the community, and this is where films like ours should be seen, so that the dialogue can begin.
Maybe you don't know the answer to this, because this involves very sophisticated theological knowledge, but a caller wonders, are Muslims also awaiting the second coming, because Islam accepts both Jewish and Christian theology?
I don't believe they do, but I'm not an expert. I do know, obviously, that the Bible is a subset of the great vast literature that is in the Muslim theology, but I don't know the answer.
We did, during this film, we were actually in Turkey and ended up filming a Muslim man who talked about the apocalypse and their version of it. And it seemed to me, as a non-educated person in this area, that his story could easily be mapped onto the Christian story of the end of the world, which is an irony. They're really so close in many ways.
Well, what does the Bible say exactly? Does it tell the story as you described it earlier?
Well, you know, that's a question of, you know, squeezing the lemon over the page and holding it over the candle, and the invisible ink comes out. The Book of Revelations has got to be one of the and this is where all of this theology comes from. It's the last book in the Bible, I think almost the last. And it is written in the most, when I read it, it reads like someone on acid. It's the most visionary, hallucinatory, extraordinary book. It's beautiful. What it actually means is the subject of huge debate, and there is a 19th century fellow named Brown, who is apparently the father of this whole rapture Armageddon theology. The word Armageddon, the Battle of Armageddon, appears precisely in one line of the Bible. This apparently it's central battle marks the end of the world. The word rapture, I don't think it may exist once, if at all. You know, you're getting into angels dancing on heads of pins at this point.
What happens when you tell these people that people have been talking about the last days since the year 1000?
Okay, you want
to? Why would they believe it's imminent now?
Oh, this is people have believed this, as you can well imagine. People have believed the world's coming to an end for generations, and I think it's partly just the nature of the human condition. Life is scary. That's actually one of the things he wanted to bring out in the film, is how modern life can be very alienating, and there's a very natural emotional draw to a story like this. It says, no, it's all going to make sense, and you're part of it, and these bad wars and the environment falling apart. It's part of the grand plan. Don't panic. Just to answer it a little bit differently, what I was surprised about is how immediately candid and open people were. I was embarrassed to ask people about the rapture. Do you really believe Jesus is going to suck you out of your clothes? And these jet propulsion engineers, this nice yuppie couple, said, oh, this could happen during our interview. And I just was amazed at how they looked at me dead on. So these folks believe it literally.
And they were very, very aware of the fact that as scientists, they should have different beliefs.
No,
but they seem to have worked that out.
They have reconciled it completely in their minds.
Yes, I think there's a logic, an internal logic behind this that they follow. And when we went to the conference with 600 people in suits gathering in Texas, they spoke very much in scientific terms when they discussed prophecy. So it's not a question of interpretation. They're very, very strongly anti-relativism interpretation. There's one truth here. And I think that going back to the question of why is the feeling that the end times may be coming kind of a perennial sense, that there's always, if you look for it, you can find a sense of impending doom. That's
the
nature of life.
There's a crisis going on right now,
right.
In fact. Yes. The Walter Reed Theater is hosting the New York Jewish Film Festival, and Waiting for Armageddon will be screened on January 28th at 2 p.m. and then January 29th at 8:30 with a reception following. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you
Thanks,
so
Lenny.
Much.
Great.